Big guest on today's podcast, he's the host of Serious Seller Podcast, Bradley Sutton. And man, great tips and information that were revealed on today's podcast. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. We cover everything from how to research a product, keyword strategies, inventory management, 3PL strategies. We even touch base on pay-per-click advertising, and then we end our podcast with some rocket-fired questions just on, you know, what we think the future of Amazon is going to hold. So you're in for a treat today. Really excited to sit down and have a great chat with Bradley. This one will go the full hour. Not often I do that. And every single minute during this podcast has a good nugget you can take away and take action today to grow your Amazon sales. This is the My Amazon Guy podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Pope, founder of the agency My Amazon Guy. Tune in each week to learn how to grow your Amazon sales. Bradley, welcome to the My Amazon Guy podcast. I'm super excited to talk to you because I think you're one of the leading experts and evangelists of all things selling on Amazon. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, you know, before you jumped in, we were debating, you know, what would be the topic to hit today? And you literally could talk about anything, and I love it. So let's start with keyword research strategies. What are you seeing is the latest trends?
Keyword research, it's something that before I worked at Helium 10 was one of my specialties. You know, when I was a consultant for Amazon sellers, that was one of my main things was the finding the best keywords. And I think, you know, for the last, it's been about a year and a half now, I've been just trying to push this kind of mindset, I guess, that I believe that sellers aren't focusing enough on is sometimes because of tools like Helium 10 or whatever tool people are using, and just the ecosystem, people just get in this mindset of thinking just from a seller's viewpoint, you know, and not the buyers. And we need to just sometimes just take it back to basics because so many people are Amazon buyers as well. And for whatever reason,
heck, everything that hits my house is coming in an Amazon box. No doubt.
Right. Right. I mean, like every day, I probably got three deliveries today, as a matter of fact, but we're all Amazon buyers, but somehow we just completely forget about that when we're thinking about when we become a seller. And we just start thinking in terms of brand analytics or search volume what score something has. And it's like, you know, these things are important metrics, you know, but they can't be our only focus. You can't forget about who we're trying to sell to. We're not selling to the Amazon algorithm. We're trying to convince a buyer to get our product. And so in a nutshell, you know, the philosophy I've been trying to like get across lately is telling people when they approach keyword research, in a nutshell, what it is buyers have this need in their head of a product, and what they do is they already have an image, you know, of what they want to buy, and they translate that image into a keyword search term, and that's how they try and find it. And then the process is they're looking on their search results for a product that matches that image in their head. So basically, if you were to simplify the whole process, you know, keyword research is kind of like trying to make sure that you have all of those possible keywords that anybody who would be remotely interested in your product, or if your product matches that image in their head that hits their need, those are the all the possible keywords that they could have used to find it. And if you haven't done that, or if you haven't approached keyword research in that way, then you know you're missing out. I can pretty much guarantee that.
You know, it's really interesting to hear this viewpoint from you, Bradley, because like I'm a huge Helium 10 fan, like. Anybody who's an Amazon Guy podcast listener knows I talk about it almost every other video, every other pod. And so I'll be honest, I haven't engaged the conversation like you are talking about it. I am very data centric, probably fall right into your critique area. And this is, you're making me think for a moment here. So let's dive into that a little bit. So Helium 10's has some of the most powerful tech in the world for Amazon right now, in my opinion. And so what I used to pay thousands of dollars for a month to do for my own websites back in the day, because I've been an e-commerce director for, you know, 10 years. And I used to pay for SEO tools for a website, you know, Conductor Searchlight, for example, paid $3,000 a month for that tool. And Helium 10 serves up the same level of data, sometimes even better, for like $100 or $200 a month. Yeah. So the tech's come a long way. Costs are super affordable. And so just impressed with that in general, but let's dwell on this powerful keyword tool and why should people take a step back and think through that consumer journey a little bit more?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like the keyword research starts with the data, you know, and like you said, I mean, even when I was, I wasn't using Helium 10 the first year of when I started getting into Amazon, it really wasn't.
Me either.
I didn't know about it. And then it was still, even if I knew about it, it wasn't as powerful as it is today, you know, 4 years ago. But, my keyword research starts with Helium 10, but let me give you an example. Like, for example, we did this thing on YouTube called Project X, where we found a couple of products to sell on Amazon. And one of them was a coffin shelf, right? Now this shelf.
Like, that's a coffin shelf?
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, guys, I mean, even to this day, even though everybody copied us since this was seen by a million people on YouTube, we're still selling 30 to 35 units a day of a shelf that's shaped like a coffin. Most ridiculous thing in the world. It's a perfect example of why anybody can make money on Amazon, because if we can make a six-figure product out of a shelf that's shaped like a coffin that costs us $4 and we're selling it for $35, believe me, there's opportunity out there, guys. But anyways, my point is, the reason why we found this was, and we knew that it was going to, or we had a good feeling that it was going to work, was we could see the demand for it. And we saw that in search volume, but we also saw that because we're looking at Pinterest and Etsy and different websites like that have nothing to do with Amazon or Helium 10. So we had that idea, but then when you look on Amazon, even today, you know, now there's like, you know, 7-8 people with coffin shelves and stuff. But if you search for coffin shelf, what's going to happen is you'll see near the top of page one, like completely random products, like a tapestry or a mug shaped like a skull. And the reason is because there's just not that many people who make shelves shaped like coffins. So Amazon's just throwing up random things. Now, what happens is people just like, they just want to be able to click buttons and then say, okay, this is the keywords I'm going to use. All right. So maybe they did a Cerebro, which is, you know, our reverse ASIN tool. Maybe they did a reverse ASIN tool on some keywords, or they used Magnet or whatever. And then they saw that, hey, there was this tapestry or they're doing it on this tapestry. And they see that they're on page one for the term coffin shelf. Now, the problem with that, I bet you scroll down there. I bet you there are some tapestries on there.
There actually was. That's why I started sharing.
There it is right there. Yeah. I mean, it's been a little bit since I've looked at it.
Most of the time I don't do screen sharing during podcasts because I know most people are audio only, but this was absolutely worth doing in real time.
Yeah. Like, and look at that. There's like these floating wall mount. All right. I see that there. That has nothing to do, you know, with a coffin shelf. So like maybe I did a reverse ASIN on that chandelier or that floating wall mount. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, coffin shelf has 10,000 search volume. And this product's on page one. This must be an important keyword for it. So I'm making my own wall mount, or I'm making my own, whatever the heck some of these things are, a skeleton ring hand holder. And I'm just going to focus on this keyword because it's obviously important. But no, you got to take that extra step. You know, don't just see that the tool, you know, says that they're on page one, which is 100% accurate, but search it. And then you would see, oh, the reason why this is on page one is because Amazon must be just throwing random things here, because there's only like 5 or 6 people who even have coffin shelves out there. So they're just trying to get some traction with other things. So you got to take it to that next level and ask yourself why, and think about the buyer, you know, not just look at just the raw data. Because if you just looked at the raw data, you might think that coffin shelf is a super important word for that one floating shelf or that one tapestry, just because they're near the top of page one for it.
I do a lot of coaching, and especially with people who are deciding whether to get in the game or choose what product. And I'll give you two examples. So guy number one I talked to, he was a doctor, and he, you know, on my intro call with him, he was talking about how all of his competitors are cheating. He walks me through the supplements facts. And he's like, this is what this claims. This is what it actually does. This is false. This is false. This is false. And I said, cool, what kind of products do you sell? And he said, supplements. And I thought, wow, what a great marriage, because he's a product expert and knows his stuff directly tied to what he's selling. Guy number two I talked to, he wanted to sell some interesting related products for dental hygiene, right? Like let's say, you know, high level, they're biodegradable, they're not plastic, maybe they're made out of bamboo, dental flossers, weird stuff like that. And I said, cool. So are you a dentist? And he said, no. And he said, why are you asking me that? And I said, well, your competitors are going to be dentists. Tell me the number one reason why somebody would buy this. So we get into that dialogue and go back and forth. And I said, you know what? I wouldn't do this product niche if I were you. You went through the data. You found, obviously, this thing's in high demand, but how are you going to win on the features? And I get to talk to him, and turns out he's just really knowledgeable about certain sports. And I said, go find products related to what you understand. The data can help you like narrow it down, but stay where you're comfortable first. I think your example you gave me spurned that idea because it was almost the absence of data or customer journey that prompted you to select this item. And I think that's a great way to do it. Data can support, but sometimes understanding the consumer is even superior.
Yeah. And if people can find something that they're passionate about or they're really knowledgeable about it, they're going to have a completely better chance at success than the average person. But what the problem is a lot of times what somebody might be an expert on, you could be an expert on neck pillows. That doesn't mean you're going to be successful on Amazon, right? You know, because neck pillows is completely saturated, or collagen peptides, like I always say, right? So what happens is it's kind of like, yeah, supplements. You got to do that second part is, I didn't know the first thing about coffin shells. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm not a gothic person. I don't, you know, wear black lipstick and do weird Ouija boards or whatever it's called, you know, like, so I didn't understand that, but I'm like, I'm not going to just give it up. The opportunity is there. So like what I did was I made myself an expert in this. So like, I'm like, okay, let me study this niche in depth. Let me understand what the typical customer avatar is like. And I made myself an expert in coffin shelves. That's what you got to do.
Great tip. And the reason I think that is because, so with that dental example, I said, go buy 3 competitor products and go buy your samples from China and then go give it to 10 dentists and then write down their feedback. The comment that you made, you went and became the expert. Yeah. Fantastic tip. Love it. Okay. So let's walk through this absence of data, which you located, and you're like, hey, I'm going to go do coffin shells for the various reasons you talked about.
Yeah.
What's like step two, right? So like now you've identified the product and you're going out for it. How do you position this with your own keyword research?
Well, in our case, and we documented this journey too, there was one person who was selling, and they've been out of stock for probably like, you know, 7 months now. But at the time, there was one person, we could see them going in and out of stock. So we had somewhat of a basis that we could still run some data on. You know, we could look into Cerebro and see what was driving their sales. You know, where were they at the top of page one that was definitely relevant to their product? And so we could see things like gothic decor or coffin shelf or different things like that. So we kind of had a starting point. But then, you know, we also did, you know, the research on Pinterest and Etsy, and, you know, especially Etsy, where you know, there was tons of coffin shelves, not because it's saturated, but it's just easy for somebody to throw something up and, hey, if you order one, I'll make it in my garage, you know? So it's not like people are having to do big investments. So that's why there's more sellers on Etsy. And so we could look at their tags, you know, that they have on Etsy. You know, that was something I just talked about in a recent blog, where it's kind of cool. You know, in Amazon, we go through this process where we sellers, we look for our top 10 keywords, most important keywords, but nobody knows that. Like, no, unless somebody does the keyword research, they can't like spy on what we think are our top 10 keywords. You can do that on Etsy, because on Etsy, any Etsy seller who is trained and who's smart, or who uses like kind of like Etsy tools, they're like, hey, you have got to have your 10 tags, kind of like hashtags. And there's a special section for that on the Etsy pages, all the way in the bottom of the page. It almost seems like it's an Etsy widget, because it says related searches to this product or something like that. So you almost think like, oh, this is just some Etsy algorithm. But actually, those tags come directly from the seller putting into their listing the top 10 keywords that they want to be searchable for. So it's kind of cool that you actually have insight that you can't have on Amazon into what the top 10 keywords are for these sellers. And so that also gives you a starting point when you don't have much data to look on Amazon, and you did find this opportunity because of Etsy. Well, now you can go ahead and at least have a starting place. And then I would take some of those keywords and then put it into like Magnet or something like that.
So Etsy, I think, was the biggest sleeper of 2020.
Yep. Very incredible results. I'm an Etsy seller. I've got on screen here one of my top selling wine glasses. I talk about my own products freely just because they're kind of just product examples to help my clients. Mm-hmm. So walk me through. So this tag, I just did a control F for tag. Didn't quite find it.
Right there. There. If you have the, if you have it on, which you might not even have on your page, it'll be at the bottom right above the explore related categories.
Got it.
So like all the way at the bottom.
Yep. Here we go. So home, yeah, and living,
so,
kitchen.
So explore related categories. That is from Etsy. And that's good in itself. You know, the more time your product is up on Etsy, the more that's going to populate. But then the one I'm talking about is called explore related searches. And so it looks like you don't have your tags optimized.
I'm an SEO guy. I'm being called out here. I'm going to have to.
Oh my goodness.
Homework. Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah. I haven't,
I didn't know about this until maybe like, I don't know, a month ago or something. And I was, yeah, you know, just doing some YouTube research. I'm like, oh my goodness. I didn't even realize that. I mean, I did have tags on Etsy when I've done tests, but I didn't realize where they actually showed up. And it's right there at the bottom of the page.
So that's good insight. I'll be honest. I don't think I've ever done any research on improving my Etsy sales before. So I got a lot to learn on that one. Great tip. For those that aren't on Etsy today, if you have a product that could be on Etsy, whether it's handmade or could look like it's handmade, I'd recommend it. It's a great platform to be on. Last comment we'll make on Etsy. ShipStation is a great way to automate shipping out of your FBA inventory for any of your Etsy or non-Amazon orders. And you can automate it so you don't ever have to touch the platform. So, all right, cool. So I like the idea that you're exploring off of Amazon to come up with your Amazon data. We talked about Pinterest, Etsy, yep, great insights to that. So that's really cool. Any closing thoughts on keyword research people aren't taking advantage of, you know, whether it's Frankenstein, Cerebro, or otherwise? What are they not doing they should be doing?
There's a newer filter that we've been pushing since, I don't know, it's been about 3-4 months. And so, you know, the traditional way to get your top keywords still, I mean, we were the first ones to implement it and people still are barely catching up, but we did this a year and a half ago with that multi-ASIN Cerebro search. So that's how you can get your most relevant keywords. You put in a baseline product, you put in your top 5 or 6 most relevant to your product ASINs. And then what I do is I filter it down, you know, like for the highest search volume, but where they're all on page one almost, where most of my top competitors are on page one and they're all ranking for it, obviously. So usually I can get a good 5-10 of my main keywords. Those are the ones I want to try and, you know, launch against, et cetera. But one thing that people haven't been using is this new, we have, it's called an advanced rank filter. So what happens sometimes is, especially in newer niches where by definition, the sellers are not very experienced and they might be rookies, you know, like that's when you see they're not even using TOS compliant images and things like that. You're like, ooh, this is going to be easy to take their position. But what happens is, even though they're top sellers in this niche, it's not across the board where they're all using the right keywords. Like maybe sometimes only out of like the top 6 or 7 products, only 2 of them might be ranking high or performing well for a keyword. And the other guys, they're either not on page one or they don't even have that word in their listing. So there's this new feature in Cerebro. It's on the bottom right, you know, for anybody who has Cerebro, and it's called the advanced rank filter. And what I like to do is I clear all my other filters and I put in here, show me a keyword. Forget about the rank average, you know, because what happens is if you take the rank average and yeah, there's 2-3 guys on the top of page one, but then you got 2 of the other competitors, they're like on page 6 or 7, guess what? Your rank average is like 100 or 125. So it's not even going to come up on the traditional way to do your reverse ASIN. So what I do is I'm like, Helium 10, show me a keyword where a maximum of 1 or 2 out of the 5 or 6 guys are in the top 10. Like, I'm not saying average. I'm like, I just want, hey, show me where only 2 guys and the rest of the people are outside. And then
you're talking about your filters here. This is really easy to do, but also fundamentally difficult to understand. So, so you really have to tweak the filter to do this. So I'm going to repeat kind of what you mentioned. So in the filter, you're looking at multiple ASINs at the same time doing your keyword dump. That's the easy part. Yep. The hard part, not hard, but hard unless you know to do it. You were saying only show me ones where only one shows up in the top rankings. And why do you want to do that?
Because those keywords still might be valuable. Just because only one guy or two guys are ranking for it doesn't mean it should be completely disregarded. And if it is relevant, you know, of course, what's going to happen sometimes when you do this is you're going to get some branded keywords because obviously only one person might be doing the best for their own brand name or something. But when you find another keyword, and I've done this countless times where I never would have discovered these keywords, is when you find a keyword that only one out of the two, out of the top five or six top competitors are on page one, guess what? It's going to be way more easy for you to rank on the top of page one because you're not, instead of competing with all six guys who are all battling for the top 10 positions,
awesome.
You're only battling with like one or two guys. So like the level of competition to compete on this keyword, either in PPC or in organically, is much less. So those are usually golden keywords to go after.
It's going to be really hard to beat that recommendation. That might be the best piece of insight where somebody can take action today in 5 minutes and, yep. and have a completely new strategy to look at. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that today, Bradley.
No worries.
All right. So we're going to switch it up. Now we're going to talk about inventory. Q4 challenges never been more woeful. You know, the IPI conversation, that ship sailed. So people already know like, hey, I can't ship in enough product, but let's talk impact. So I'll give you my thought and then turn it over to you. I think that Q4 is going to be insane this year. I think we're going to see 100% year-over-year sales velocities simultaneously because you can only ship in 200 units on a brand new item. You can only ship in 90-day supply on your best sellers. And if you have any seasonality, which most people do, I predict that we're going to see massive stockouts this year. So what does that mean? What do you do about that? I think the best tip I can give is go in and have merchant fulfilled available this year. Yep. You're going to be shipping by December 2nd your inventory to get somebody's Christmas presents this year, my opinion. All right, so your take, you can take this wherever you'd like. What should people do with inventory this year?
3PL warehouses or just in your own house is the only way to go. If you're launching a brand new product or you're resurrecting a dormant one, like maybe you only have a Christmas product and the rest of the year it's getting zero sales and now it's time to, you know, break it out again, you know, like Christmas lights or Christmas ornaments or something like that. But you're going to have that 200 limitation unless, you know, Amazon is trying to increase their fulfillment warehouse space by 50%. So who knows, you know, if they're able to close that Sears deal or JCPenney deal or something, and then all of a sudden, miraculously, they get it up and running, which I doubt.
There's, you know, there's in the next no way. Month,
like, you know, like,
Christmas, but
yeah, I mean, yeah. Things are getting better, you know, a little bit on checking things in, but let's just assume that that's not going to be completely resolved.
I don't even blame Amazon. Like they're just under severe pressure. Yeah. I mean, like they're half the economy and the whole supply chain's disrupted.
Who could have predicted this increase in sales this year? Who could have predicted COVID? So like, you know, yeah, they're not really to blame.
Decade of e-com growth in 8 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, even if they do exceptionally well, I still think it's going to be a total crap show. Like,
yeah, it's going to be insane. Especially, didn't some retailers even say that they're not even going to do a Black Friday or something like some crazy thing like that? So that's even going
to. I have no plan on doing a discount this year on my own items.
Yeah,
like,
no, but like when I say retailers, I'm talking about like brick and mortar. Like I forgot who it was, but there was somebody like some brick and mortars that traditionally do huge Black Friday things. Like they said they're not going to. So I'm like, guess what? All the people who are going to wait in tents normally. To go to
they're
these stores,
online
they're just gonna be on Amazon, right, or online. So you just gotta bite the bullet, and if you needed 1,000 units, well, guess what? You gotta send 200 to Amazon and 800 to your warehouse. In my test, it's only 13 to 14 days of semi steady sales where you're gonna get that increased a lot. So like I did a test a few weeks ago where I sent something into Amazon, like just 100 units. And it wasn't like flying off the shelves. It was selling like 3 to 5 units a day. So, you know, we're not talking a big time sales velocity here. But after 14 days, it went up to like 450, just by selling 2 or 3 a day. So I say get started a little bit earlier with your new products and go for some sales. You know, I mean, sometimes you maybe even do it at a loss a little bit. You know, like do some Facebook ads just to get that sales velocity. If you can't get organic sales in October or November for your brand new items, then you're going to have to like, you're going to have to use a service or you're going to have to run a discount just to get the sales velocity. Because if you can sell 4 or 5 units a day, you're instantly going to get that doubled, if not more, your capacity. But if you're selling like 10, 15 units a day, it's going to go up to like 1,000 capacity. Then you can just go ahead and send the rest in. But you've got to do this before the rush season, because it's going to be, yeah, sure, you get your inventory increased, but if they're so backed up like they normally are, even in normal circumstances, to check things in during Q4, well, you're kind of screwed because that doesn't do you any good. But absolutely, what you said is correct. People need to have dual listings. You've got to have both FBM and FBA to make sure that you're not out of stock.
There are so many nuggets in what you said. It's amazing insight, Bradley. So the first comment I'd make is that's incredible data to know that you, in a 2-week time period, you can get your next shipment in. I had a client call today where I basically guessed that it would take a couple of weeks, but mm-hmm. I was trying to explain that like until the inventory leaves the warehouse, they're counting it against you. That's what they did during April and May.
Yep.
And so let's say it takes 2 weeks to ship an item out again. Could happen. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, your 200 is tied up. So the earlier you get started, the better. So great, great feedback on that. Back to your point about 3PLs though, I thought Amazon was supposed to be passive income. Like, what do you mean I got to go get a 3PL here?
Yep. Yep. I've been teaching this for years because I have personal experience. My first foray into Amazon was almost all fulfilled by merchant. I have a 2,000 square foot warehouse behind my house. And one of my first businesses I got joined with was I actually gave up my house and moved back in with my parents. And I gave up my house and that became like the office for this company I was working with. In our warehouse, we ran it out of there. And I had this machine and I was shipping 500 phone cases a day fulfilled by merchant.
That's awesome.
And even when we switched, you know, to FBA, we always kept FBM active. And I've always taught that like you get anywhere between 1% and 4% more sales by having two listings active, one FBM, one FBA, just because for the percentage of the population who does not have Prime, they might not even see a buy box for your product if all you have is Prime, or some international people who can't order from Prime. You've lost those sales forever if you didn't have a fulfilled by merchant. But now it's even more important that you've got to have a fulfilled by merchant option run through a 3PL or run out of your garage if you have the space, or your apartment even. But yeah, gone are the days where I think people understand now that, you know, it's not just about laptop lifestyle after you take a $20,000 course and you just flip a switch and go to Maldives or something and kick back. That's not how it works.
Oh, what do you mean? I can't be an Amazon ninja? Come on now. I like to harp on the passive income comment a lot because I coach a lot of people out of getting into this game. They're like, yeah, I just got laid off from COVID. I'm going to go sell my item on Amazon. And I was like, you guys don't understand. This is an investment. You're not going to be profitable for at least 6 months, maybe 12. Right. It's always fun to make fun of that. All right. So any other inventory tips you'd recommend?
Inventory tips. Let me think, what else? Just, you know, an important thing is if you are launching, guys, and I've been doing more and more tests on this, but that what some people call the honeymoon period or that period of time.
Yeah, where, I got questioned by a client whether it still exists. Does honeymoon still exist?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely does. You know, there's no set days, number of days, but the reason I mention it and having to do with inventory is what happens sometimes is what people do is they want to put their FBA sticker, their FN SKU actually on the package, and rightfully so. You know, have the Chinese factory do it for zero, as opposed to having Amazon do it for like, I think they raised the price like 23 cents or something like that. You know, so it's a big number right there. So you've got to like close your listing or something to conserve it. Like me personally, there's a beauty for me of, you know, having a warehouse at my house is I do not even create the list, just to be super safe. I don't even create the listing until my product is here and I'm ready to send it to Amazon. So it's like, as soon as I send it to Amazon, it's literally day three, regardless if my listing was closed or open, of the listing, because I just label the stuff, you know, at my warehouse here. But if you guys are doing brand new inventory, you know, you create your listing. If you got to do it, go ahead. But, you know, close your listing, suppress it, you know, take away the main image.
What about offer release date? That's kind of what I've been doing.
Some people have done that. I haven't done enough testing on it to be able to say
for sure.
I only like talking about stuff that I've actually tested. So I'm not just talking on my butt, you know, but I've heard about that too. from others.
Next time you can run a test, let me know what you find out. I've been advocating that one. It's just for most people, they're not sophisticated enough to do like that 72-hour agile turnaround. So they have to have the listing up. They got to order their A-plus content from their designer. They got to build their PPC campaign. Really, really hard to flip the script on that in 72 hours. But that'd be really cool. But I think the thing I respect most about you is the fact that you literally test every single thing. And it's so awesome for you to do that. Because like what you're talking from is personal experience from like grinding that axe yourself. And as people struggle dealing with Amazon constantly with catalog battles, listing yanks, like people at Amazon don't even know their left hand from their right hand right now. I can't tell you how many times I hear, well, that's what Amazon told me to do. And I'm like, yeah, but in reality, this is what's really happening. Right. Yep. What would you say to those people? Like give them some words of encouragement that maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel on this one or no.
I just say, you know, just to make a blanket general statement, there's light at the end of the tunnel for everything. You know, there's people I talk to who, you know, to be honest, don't even know what they're doing and they're successful, you know? And then I know people look at that and they're like, oh, so frustrating. You know, I'm working my butt off here and I'm doing all the right things that I learned in YouTube and that I learned in Helium 10 or Freedom Ticket or whatever. And I just can't seem to be successful. So guys, it's, you know, the one thing about Amazon is it's not there's no exact formula for guaranteed success or guaranteed failure. There's people who do the wrong things and they'll be successful. There's people who do the right things and they can fail. So to me, the name of the game is just, it's almost like playing the odds. You can set yourself up in a position where you have a better chance of success by going through this like blueprint of things, whether it's managing the right inventory or doing the right product research, doing the right keywords research, doing the right listing optimization. It's still never going to guarantee. I mean, there's 9-figure sellers who launch products that fail. You know, there's nothing that's guaranteed no matter how good you are, but at least you increase that rate of success, you know, maybe from 30% chance of success if you just do random stuff to like 80 or 90% chance, you know, when you do the right things. And these things like this inventory thing, these limitations, things like that happen. That's what's happening this year. 3 years ago, everybody built their businesses around doing incentivized reviews, you know, which was totally legal. And then that completely changed. So every year, I guarantee you guys, you're going to have to completely pivot on something that you are completely used to on Amazon. And it's going to be a struggle, but you know, keep your head up because that, you know, the only thing consistent on Amazon sometimes is change. And what sets, the successful sellers apart from the ones that fail is the people who don't adapt to these changes or the people who just give up because it's too hard to deal with it. That's great for you. You know, if you guys are one of the go-getters or the ones who are going to stick with it and actually adapt and just sit down and figure it out, guess what? You've got an advantage right off the bat over, you know, maybe 75% of the other people who are just like, this is too frustrating.
Perseverance is what gets you up in the morning. You know, that idea that no matter what mud gets slinged at you today, you're going to clean it off, get back up and fight some more. Great advice on that. Very much agreed. Okay. So let's talk real briefly, virtual bundles. I've had no success with this. Have you had any success with virtual bundles?
Not really. I mean, I tested it like as soon as it came available just to see. I mean, it's kind of a cool thing. But
no,
you're not running PPC to it through the you know sponsored brand ads, then it's like, or if you're not doing just the traditional stuff to get it to rank, you know, like if you're not doing some kind of Facebook campaign or search find buy or whatever people you know use out there, nobody's ever even going to see it. So I think it's cool because it takes zero investment by you, zero inventory. You can just test to see if things are going to get traction, but without sending traffic to it through Amazon or through off Amazon, you're never going to sell hardly any units.
Makes sense to me. Maybe they'll change it so you can do sponsored products to it. But until then,
I agree. Sense that they should, but who knows?
I don't know why. All right. So let's talk PPC then, since we starting to kind of venture down there. We've seen more changes to the advertising ecosystem. Mm. Even today, they announced, hey, they're running video ads in the UK. Me personally, I think video ads are the hottest thing and everybody should jump into that bandwagon. What are your opinions on video ads, or maybe you think something else is hotter?
Yeah, video ads is, I mean, from what I see from, you know, like click rates. And if you have a really good one, it stops the scroll, you know, which is what you're supposed to be doing for your thumbnail, right? But now on the search, you know, on the search results now, I mean, that literally stops the scroll when you get to do something creative. And it's so good that for now, at least it's autoplay, you know? So I would, you know, if anybody, there's so many reasons now to get brand registry, you know, originally people say, I don't really need it. And then it was brand analytics came out. If you had, I'm definitely going to get brand registry. But now with all the, you know, sponsored brand and sponsored display and sponsored video, it's like becoming more and more almost necessary these days.
We started selling trademarks because it was so important. We're like, come on, guys, get your act together. You don't have to talk to a lawyer. We'll take care of it for you. But yeah, like I thought A+ content was a good enough reason. And just using Helium 10's data to show like before and after A+ content, imagine no other change to the listing, no more ad spend, just literally A+ content loaded. We saw indexing go up absurd numbers, like hundreds and hundreds of keywords gained by just throwing up A+ content. So if you don't have brand registry right now, you should probably just sell your Amazon business because the sophistication is going up so much. You're missing the boat on that one. Come on, guys. All right. So video ads, is there any particular keys to success on that segmentation or other ads you think people need to do right now?
For PPC, it's like there's so many metrics nowadays. I mean, what did Amazon just release a few weeks ago? There's like all, you know, there's ROAS now. And it's like, people are like, what do I look at? And I'll tell you one thing.
When they roll something out, couldn't they at least like make it optional, right? Like every single report I've been looking at for the last decade has been in ACoS, and all of a sudden this ROAS thing shows up. And by the way, I like ROAS. It's just now I got to rethink my entire brain. Holy crap.
What do you think? It's like I try and block it out and I just like try and go back to the basics. And here's the funny thing. I'll be the first to admit, like until last November, December, I never really managed PPC campaigns. You know, I launched over 400 products in my day. That wasn't my thing. I did the launch. I did the keyword research. I did the listing optimization. I let other people that I work with or other partners or just the company itself. I was like, you guys handle PPC. Cause I'm like, my brain can't handle it. It's too crazy for me. It's too much.
That's
stuff.
A smart strategy though. Like it does take some segmentation, right? The matriculation of Amazon, we're entering this maturity phase. The product lifecycle of Amazon requires this level of sophistication. So you're a super sophisticated seller, but you chose which areas to be sophisticated in and then partnered with somebody else to handle the rest. It makes perfect sense. But go ahead with, I know you were trying to set up that you're not like the be all end all PPC.
I didn't know anything. But, and then we came out with the ads platform. That's the Helium 10 PPC tool. And then finally PPC kind of made sense and it made the process super easy. So as of today, which is like 7 months later after I had never done PPC at all, I'm currently completely running 145 PPC campaigns over a bunch of these, you know, like we talked about. I do test listings, I do case studies all the time. I'm by myself managing 155 PPC campaigns, and you know, that's generating thousands of dollars, and it takes me like 1 or 2 hours a week. So the reason is I'm focusing on what matters and what I know. So, you know, thanks to the ads tool, like I was able to get down to what really matters. And it's not just ACoS and it's not just, you know, clicks and it's not just conversions, but you just got to like look at it as a whole. You know, today's not Tuesday, but we can talk about tacos, right? You know, tacos, your total ACoS is important as well. But the reason why I love that tool, and, you know, of course, whenever, you know, I'm wearing a Helium 10 shirt and I start talking about a tool, somebody just thinks I'm a salesman. I'm talking about from just somebody who's on your side, who was an Amazon seller. I did not want to tackle PPC. And to me, that's like the number one thing that people go to agencies or really expensive, you know, software that costs like $1,000 or consultants, because it's they were like in my boat from before. It's like, man, you know, a PPC is just too much. I'm not even going to tackle it. But finally, in my opinion, ads makes it kind of like accessible. And so I just have a simple strategy. When I start a product, I start with 4 campaigns. 3 of them all work together and it works together in ads. But guess what, guys? If you don't have Helium 10, you could do the same strategy. It just takes you 10 times as long because you have to run reports, which is totally fine though. Totally fine. I have a auto campaign. I've got a broad match campaign and I've got an exact manual campaign, and I have them working in conjunction. Now, the reason why I can do 140 campaigns in just 2 hours a week is because I put in my rules to Helium 10. I'm like, hey, this is my target ACoS. Hey, this is how many clicks I want to see on a keyword without sales for me to say, you know what, I probably should negative match this, or I probably lower my bid. Hey, this is how many sales I want to see on a brand new keyword I just discovered in the auto or broad before I make it an exact manual. I mean, like, I put in all these rules of whatever your own strategy, and everybody has different strategies. You put in whatever your rules are, and then just Helium 10, like every day tells you what to do in order to try and help you reach your goals. Whether you're using Helium 10 ads or whether you're doing this on your own, it's the same exact process. You've just got to make sure you just stick to what matters instead of trying to do like a million things. Just stick to like four or five metrics that'll bring you success. And that's why, like there was one account where they had it like at an 80% ACoS, you know, and after like 2 months, I got it down to like about 30 or 40, you know, just like 1 hour a week, because they were just missing things. They were wasting money on keywords that they didn't have to.
Not negating on auto campaigns,
tons of stuff that people are just amazing what people are doing that's wrong. They're just like throwing money away because they think that, oh, I'm going to trust the Amazon algorithm. And if something is not performing well in an auto or broad,
shut up and take my money, Amazon.
Amazon will go ahead and say, no, I don't want your money anymore, seller. You know, I'm gonna negative match this for you. No, Amazon doesn't do that. They love taking your money for no reason. Hey, that's a good business model, you know, but that's not a good business model for you on your side. So you've got to be able to look at your data and say, hey, stop spending money on keywords that aren't bringing you money, and on new keywords that you didn't even realize were bringing you money, you need to double down on that, increase your bid, expand your campaign, etc. So PPC is not that hard, guys, once you just like really focus on what matters.
It's definitely the number one thing that agencies tend to offer, because there's the fastest way to grow sales outside of adding sourcing new product. Okay, last question on you mentioned tacos. So what do you put on your tacos exactly?
Carne asada is my main thing in salsa. That's it.
Keep it simple. I like it.
Keep it simple. I don't want a whole bunch of vegetables and crazy things in there. I just want the meat.
All right. So let's go rapid fire now. Fastest way to grow sales on Amazon. I just kind of mentioned that outside of PPC and adding new products, what do you think the next fastest way to add sales on Amazon is?
Influencer marketing. I've had indirect experience with that, like on accident, influencers tweeting out or blogging about something, and then just sales would go 100x. So if I can do that by accident, like if people actually do that on purpose with the actual strategy, I mean, I think you could just really increase your sales.
Will Walmart ever catch up to Amazon?
No.
Just simple no.
Easy. I mean, unless there's some like, what do you call it? Antitrust legislation. You're like, hey, we're going to break up Amazon or something. Apart from some government legislation, there's no way Walmart will ever catch Amazon.
What is your greatest failure as an Amazon seller?
As an Amazon seller, my greatest probably failure was just in the beginning, I had business partners who kept me in the dark. When I was doing those 500 FBM orders a day, that was all they let me do. I was a business partner, and all they let me do was like manage FBA inventory and manage FBM. And I didn't know anything. And when I left them, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, these guys are like keeping things secret. I left that company and I just dedicated myself for a year to learn about Amazon. And I did, but keeping myself in that kind of situation where I was just trying to, I was just, you know, in this little box, that was terrible. So guys, if you have business partners who are like keeping Amazon things from you or just anything in general, it's probably not good business partners that you should have.
I went through a similar experience, actually. So that resonated with me. I think every company needs three things to run: marketing, operations, and finance. And I feel like your company needs to be good at all three, but it has to be exceptional at one. For me, it was marketing. For you, which of those three do you think you'd put your hat on?
I'd say marketing as well.
And so for those that are listening, if you pair yourself with somebody who's better at the other two mm-hmm. or one that you're not good at, that's how you know you got a good business partner, in my opinion. Yep. What makes your heart sing? This is a generic question. It doesn't have to be Amazon focused, but what makes your heart sing?
I'm going to have to say traveling. And that's still partly Amazon focused, because it's so funny. You know, anybody who follows me on social media, they'll see me going around to different countries and different cities. And I seem to be always doing Helium 10 meetups and things like that. And actually, these are my vacations, most of them. You know, I'm not being paid to go out there. I just love meeting Amazon sellers and Helium 10 users, but I just love traveling. So like, and that's the number one hardest thing about COVID is that's almost come to a complete stop. But yeah, I love traveling.
Yeah. So I'm looking at Labor Day weekend coming up here. And as a business owner, you know, you're working 24/7 regardless, right? But like the thing I'm looking forward to wasn't vacation. It was working less.
I would love to be able to, but I just can't. Like I have a sabbatical coming up. The cool thing about Helium 10, I mean, man, they really take care of the employees here. After you be there 2 years, you get a full 1 month paid sabbatical.
That's incredible.
And so like I have that coming up. I'm going to spend a month or so in Japan next year. And I'm just like, there is no way you're going to keep me away from Slack and you're going to keep me away from Project X. Like, I know I'm going to be still doing stuff. So like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I can't force myself not to work.
This is a great ending thought because I've been thinking about culture a lot. And the question that I've been trying to tackle this year is like, what would it take to get somebody to stay at my Amazon guy 5, 10, 15 years? And I do not have the answer to this yet, but maybe it's a 1 month sabbatical. Holy crap.
Yeah. I never worked for a company that did that before. So I'm like, whew, yes, yes, please. And thank you.
All right. Very last question for you today. If any other words of wisdom you'd offer, words of encouragement, cheerleading, if you will, mm-hmm. or hack, your choice, what would it be?
Let's see, words of wisdom or a hack. I would say the hack I like to give out, again, nothing to do with Helium 10, but I shared this with a guest on my podcast who is selling six figures, and he didn't even know about this. But a lot of you guys know this already, but anybody who's doing any kind of volume on Amazon and PPC, by default, Amazon is taking your PPC charges out of your disbursements, you know, what you're making on Amazon. Do not do that because it does you no good. Get a credit card that gives you cash back, or if you're like me, gives you travel points so that you never have to pay for a business class flight ever again. And use that credit card to pay off your PPC and just pay it, you know, pay the credit card, obviously, every month. And, you know, imagine if you're spending, you know, there's people out there who spend $10, $50, $100,000 a month on PPC. That's like, you know, $10, $50, $100,000 travel points a month that you're getting for free doing nothing new. And now you can pretty much fly all over the world.
It's
first class without paying for it.
It's funny that you mentioned this hack because about a month or so ago, you had mentioned it on something and I've been listening in and that was actually when I made my change. I actually made this change about 30 days ago. So,
nice. All right. Well, now soon you'll be, where are you located?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay. Now you can go ahead and come out here. Fly when things settle down, you'll be able to fly out here for free here and visit our office. And you could thank that hack for it because like I said, I can't remember the last time I paid for a flight. Thanks to this.
I'm more of a home buddy. I'll have to travel someday, but man, when you run an agency, you're just constantly firefighting every day. It's like really hard to step away. But anyway, great having you on the podcast today. There is just so many nuggets of information. It's going to be really hard to write the notes on this one. Thanks for coming on, Bradley.
Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, that was Bradley Sutton, Director of Training, Chief Evangelist of Helium 10. And what a superb guy coming on to join us and be transparent, give secrets, give tips. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you're joining us from the Helium 10 audience, never heard of my Amazon guy before, we're a 30-person agency out of Atlanta, Georgia. Over 100 active clients where we manage growing sales through traffic and conversion improvements. Hit that subscribe button. Thanks for watching. This was the My Amazon Guy podcast with Stephen Pope. Each episode helps you grow your sales on Amazon through ideas on traffic and conversion rate improvements. Hit that subscribe button right now to tune in each week. And if you need more help, go to myamazonguy.com.